Okay, we are alive.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Fred Wilson. I'll be the hearings officer for today's public hearing. This is the time set aside for the Willamette Drive. It's called the Habitat Conservation Area Modification case. The file number is Z0312-20-HMV. Before I go through my normal statements that I do before every public hearing, either on Zoom or in person, Mr. Hanschke is going to go through and explain how this has kind of worked with the Zoom platform, how you'll be able to participate, how you'll be able to testify, and how that will all work. So I'll turn it over to Mr. Hanschke for a minute.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hearings Officer. Clackamas County is abiding by social distancing requirements during the coronavirus pandemic, so this public hearing will be conducted virtually using the Zoom platform. Panelists for today's hearing, which include the hearings officer, county staff, and the applicant, have both audio and video capability. Audience members who have joined the meeting will have their mics muted unless they wish to testify, in which case they will be called upon to do so by the county staff moderator. Audience members' video will not be turned on at any time. Today's hearing is being recorded as required by law. The county will make every effort to post the recording on the county website later today. There is a designated time during the hearing when it will be open for testimony. The hearings officer will make it clear when this is. If you want to provide testimony, you will utilize the raise hand feature. For attendees on a PC or an iPad, you have a raise hand button on the Zoom bar on the top or the bottom, depending on your device. When the moderator switches you over to provide testimony, your screen will look different for a little while. Primarily, you will see all participants' cameras, not just the one who is speaking. Staff will call upon you when it is time for you to provide testimony. Be sure to provide your name and mailing address when you begin. Once you have provided your testimony, your mic will be muted and your screen will be returned to normal. If the record is left open at the end of this hearing and you wish to submit additional written testimony, email your written testimony to my email address, which is stevehan@clackamas.us. So that's S-T-E, V as in Victor, E, H as in Hannah, A as in Apple, N as in Nancy @clackamas.us, or you can mail it to the Clackamas County Planning and Zoning Division at 150 Beaver Creek Road, Oregon City, Oregon, 97045. The staff contact email address is also available on the web page where you found this Zoom link for today's hearing. Testimony must be received by 4 p.m. on the day that the record closes. People who testify and provide their mailing address will receive a copy of the hearings officer's written decision. If you do not wish to testify but would like to receive the decision, you must provide your email or standard mailing address. By doing so, by either emailing it to the staff contact, being me, for the application, or by entering it into the Zoom chat function during the meeting. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hanschke. So today is the opportunity for people to testify, to discuss evidence, to make legal arguments. I don't make a final decision today. There'll be a later written decision that comes out after the record's been closed. There's some things I have to talk about before every public hearing, whether there's six people here or 600. I have to disclose whether I've had any ex parte contacts. That's any discussions about the merits of the case before today. And I haven't. The only thing I know about this case is what I've received from the planning department that's in the planning file and in the staff report and in the decision that's being appealed. I also need to disclose whether I'm biased, whether I'm for or against the application for any reason other than the merits of the case. And I'm not. I'm not familiar with the parties or the property. I don't have any reason to feel one way or the other. Finally, I need to disclose whether I have any conflicts of interest. I don't. I'm in private practice in Salem. I don't have any clients in Clackamas County, let alone anywhere near the subject property. I don't own property in Clackamas County or have family that owns property in Clackamas County. If you haven't been to one of these hearings before, the way this is going to work is we'll start with the staff report from Mr. Hanschke. After that, the applicant will have an opportunity to present their case. After that, anybody who's in favor of the application and wants to testify can go. And after that, we'll have a chance with the appellants and anybody else who's opposed to the application to testify. After that, Mr. Hanska will have a chance to respond to any issues that come up. And finally, the applicant will have an opportunity for final rebuttal since they have the burden of proof. I realize this is an appeal of the earlier decision, but this is a de novo hearing. So we're starting from scratch. So everything's on the table. It looks like we're probably just going to have this one issue to deal with, but we still go with the applicant first, opponent second. So that's how this will work. When you do testify, as Mr. Hanska said, please give us your name, your full name and address, so we have that for the record and can make sure you get a copy of the decision. Please direct your testimony to the approval criteria. There are quite a few of them. They're listed in the decision that's being appealed. Make sure you raise any and all issues you have. If you don't raise those issues under state law, you may be precluded from raising them in the future if there are any further proceedings or appeal of my decision. Also, the applicant, there are a number of proposed conditions of approval. If you have any concerns about those or think they may be unconstitutional takings or anything like that, make sure you raise those issues or you may be precluded from raising those in the future. I think with that, we can turn to the staff report.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Hearings Officer. I'm going to fire up PowerPoint presentation, Darcy, and then share it. Let me see here. Actually, gonna. Okay, is that visible? Okay. So basically, yeah, so this is an appeal of file number Z0320-20-HMV, a habitat map verification land use application. The subject property is Township 2 South, Range 1 East, Section 13DD, Tax Lot 3100. It's basically in the Jenning Lodge area along the Willamette River. So the overall proposal for this particular land use application was basically a habitat conservation area map verification to remove the habitat conservation that was overlaid atop of the existing home, roughly circa 1941, single family residence, and the surrounding yard area that had been developed with residential uses for quite a while. The application also includes review of the relationship of the area to several different other overlays. There's a couple of those that come into play for the purposes of this particular component of the application, particularly really the floodplain. But otherwise, the subject of this appeal is essentially regarding the habitat conservation area itself. I'm happy, Mr. Herring's office, you have questions if you need me to clarify the extent of some of these other overlays that were also basically identified and kind of dialed in. I'm happy to do that as well. Here's the overall vicinity map of the project area and the subject property. You're on the east side of the Willam River here in the Jennings Lodge area.
Mr. Hanska, I don't know about anyone else. All I see is white on my screen. Ms. Reinhardt, do you see?
Yeah, I thought maybe it was a glitch on my end, but it's just a white screen, Steve.
It says I'm seeing your screen, but it's just all white.
Okay. Any luck now?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, good. All right, let me, basically the slides that you would have missed then are essentially the introductory slide and then the overview of what the proposal was. So those two you would have missed. And then this is the slide that, like say, is essentially the vicinity map. So everything looking good, everything visible to everybody? Okay. So the habitat conservation area, this is basically the map under which it is officially inventoried by Metro. These maps are, these habitat conservation area Title 13 metro maps are adopted by the county, specifically as a Goal 5 inventory, so they are what they are. There is an opportunity in the ordinance, however, to challenge and or refine the extent of these maps, which is through the HCA map verification process, which is essentially, as noted, the subject of this appeal. This is the applicant's site plan that was submitted with the application. It basically, among other things, you've got the house itself. You have the extent of the moderate habitat conservation area, which is right here, and which is effectively the subject of this appeal, what is the extent of this habitat conservation area, moderate habitat conservation area, as it extends upland from the home site area into the backyard and toward forest canopy. So the moderate habitat conservation area extends up into the beginning of the forested canopy in the easterly area of the lot. And so this is exhibit 4. It basically shows what is the 112 feet from the edge of the flood area to the first upland tree canopy. This particular dimension here shows 100 feet from the edge of the flood area to the first upland tree. I've also noted where the applicant has identified the extent of the special flood hazard area by tying the contour of the base flood elevation. So exhibit 5 basically shows you more of a detail of how the habitat conservation area metro map identifies and maps the moderate habitat conservation area. Again, it overlays the house. By way of an aerial, it extends upland easterly into the property over the backyard and then begins to capture some of this tree canopy up here. This is basically just another detail. What this shows, number one, is the extent of the February 1996 flood inundation line. And it also illustrates the difference between the distance of 100 feet from the February 1996 flood inundation line versus the distance from the extent of the special flood hazard area moving 100 feet in upland, and the distance from that line to the upland tree canopy. The reason why I bring these up is basically because when you go through the methodology of identifying the extent of the habitat conservation area, one of the variables is the flood area, and I will get to that in a little bit more detail. So basically, the key condition in question is condition number 2C on the staff report the staff decision that ends the habitat conservation area at the point where it adjoins the west end of the existing home. And this is basically a detail of table 706-1, which is basically the matrix or the methodology that you go through to identify the habitat conservation area manually, if you will, to challenge it as identified by on the metro map. The key criteria is found under subsection 706.09E4, this table, specifically the last row of table 706.1, that addresses areas that are 0 to 100 feet from flood areas. So probably the ultimate topic at hand here is, as you move through this methodology and you identify the edge of the so-called flood area, at which point you then need to move 100 feet upland from that, where are you in the end? Okay, so in terms of the flood area, our definition of it basically defines the flood area as either FEMA-mapped floodplain or the 1996 flood inundation line. Now, the staff decision accepted that the applicant had, as I had previously mentioned, basically identified base flood elevation contour further toward the river than the extent of the way that it is currently mapped under the special flood hazard area. Under basically section 703, 44 CFR, FEMA rules and regulations, that is an acceptable means of refining the extent of, let's just call it the FEMA mapped floodplain or the special flood hazard area. Final verification and or implementation of that requires somebody to go to FEMA to get a letter of map amendment. Staff accepted that and conditioned the extent of the FEMA floodplain or the special flood hazard area to be moved as mapped by the applicant further toward the river, subject to a letter of map amendment. Regardless of the movement of that particular extent of the FEMA map floodplain, flood areas are also defined by the 1996 flood inundation line, which, regardless of the FEMA, the location of base flood elevation in the FEMA floodplain is mapped over approximately half of the house. And so, in essence, the extent of the flood area really goes to halfway over the house, due to the, at least as far as up to this point, the information that staff had at hand for purposes of how far the flood area extends. This is going to be Exhibit 11. Again, you've got the base flood of the FEMA map floodplain contour tied down here. You have the extent of the high habitat conservation area where it transitions from high to moderate, that just happens, not just so, probably for purposes of the way that it was purposefully mapped, ends exactly at the end of the February 1996 flood inundation line as mapped and digitized by Metro. So if this is the extent of the flood area here at this 1996 inundation line, and you then move 100 feet upland from that, which is what the methodology in table 706.1, you do not actually get to a tree until you hit 112 feet, which is, on the one hand, 12 feet further than the 100 feet that you're required to go upland from the edge of the flood area under this overall mapping methodology. And kind of in conclusion, a close reexamination of Exhibit 4 illustrates that that the 0 to 100 foot measurement pursuant to that last row of table 706.1 begins at the edge of the February 1996 flood inundation line from where it then measures about 112 feet to the first tree cluster that makes up the west edge of the forested tree canopy, which is essentially what I had just said. The bulk of this area is home site and manicured yard, but if the tree trunk and tree canopy extend west, as in closer to the river, more than about 12 feet from the symbolized trees on that exhibit, staff can draw the following conclusions: that the moderate habitat conservation area could extend east continuously as mapped and effectively capture at least a portion of tree canopy, upland tree canopy, and that the moderate habitat conservation area could extend east in a manner where the developed area not providing vegetated cover of the home site and the yard are removed from the habitat conservation area, and that the HC, the habitat conservation area, would then resume when the forest canopy is encountered, continuing until it reaches the point where that is 100 feet up east, of the February 1996 inundation line, which, as noted, is the same point at which the habitat conservation area now halts, that is outlined on the HCA map. So again, so this conclusion is the option number two was something that I looked at in some detail with the planning director, in that there's nothing that seems to prohibit a discontiguous removal of the habitat conservation area. In other words, as you go through this methodology and this matrix, you could in fact remove a segment of the habitat conservation area that qualifies as developed area not providing vegetative cover, i.e. a house and a manicured yard, but within that entire 100-foot distance, if there then you then capture forest canopy, the habitat conservation area could resume again for the extent of that area that is indeed forest canopy. So I'm going to stop my share, and can you see me now?
Yeah.
Okay, and so let's see that. That's the extent of my presentation on the overview of the staff report. There are a couple of variables that are left open that I left open at the end of it. These are based on comments that are likely going to be presented by the applicant. These are also points that have been raised by the appellant and by the Watershed Council and by the CPO. In terms of this overall assessment methodology, and part of it is basically a function of like what is actually in the field. At one point do you actually encounter tree canopy literally in the field, as opposed to by trying to essentially identify it by plans and symbolized trees and aerials. There may also be a discussion of where is the 1996 flood inundation line, which, again, there's nothing in the ordinance that could be located that requires the 1996 flood inundation line to be that provided by Metro and digitized by Metro, which is essentially what staff has on hand in their GIS data. So questions, or that is the extent of my presentation. Thank you.
Let's just maybe have you walk me through this one more time. So let me start at the beginning. So tell me what the Metro map says about the different areas, what's high, what's moderate, okay. All that.
All right. (Clears throat) Okay, I'm gonna actually have to go back to the, oops. Okay, can you see that?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so this is what the Metro Habitat Conservation Area map shows. Down here in the lower right corner, what you see here, this whole area is the property. Can you see that okay, Fred?
Yeah, I mean, that's awfully small scale. I can't really.
Yeah, okay, so then I can get to you. So that's the official map. So I can get to you to, there's a couple of details of that. This is basically a detail of the Habitat Conservation Area polygon at hand, or the subject of. And so this polygon overall, offsite, is high habitat conservation area like this.
And that's the one that runs that the high HCA ends at the beginning of the house, correct?
Exactly. And so that is demarcated by this line right here. And then from this line upland or east, you have moderate habitat conservation area. And I can show that. This is a much better detail of it. So the lighter green, the darker green, which is a little bit hard to see, basically shows the habitat the high habitat conservation area coming in from the north, which is essentially picking up forest canopy, a lot of off-site forest canopy. And then it's moving easterly into the property. It's picking up forest canopy here under high habitat conservation area. And then it's picking up, and then it's changing from high to moderate under this lighter green. And this is a detail, essentially a precise detail of the little teeny map I showed you, which is the official map. And again, this line here also corresponds to the edge of the 1996 inundation line. And so that's probably the best detail that you're going to see of the habitat conservation area.
Right. And so the existing SFHA, or if I've got my acronym right there, that's the one that runs through the middle of the house, right?
So it's, let me hang on here just a second. I know I've got.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the bigger sheet of that. So you've got the extent of 1996 stops is basically the edge of the building. The existing, we'll call it the floodplain, runs through the middle of the house. You've got the moderate HCA that runs up basically to the trees. And then the trees are, that's not low HCA, that's no HCA, is that right?
No, okay, yeah. So just to back up on this, so this particular line here, this blue represents the end of the February 1996 flood inundation line as mapped and digitized by Metro. It also represents the end of the high habitat conservation area. This particular lighter blue line represents the end of the FEMA floodplain, or the special flood hazard area.
That's the one they want to move by getting a LOMA.
Exactly.
So the light blue lines for this picture, do they matter for the HCA, or do we not have to worry about that for the HCA modification? assuming they get their loan.
So it is staff determined, staff concluded that assuming that they get their LOMA, then the extent of the SFHA, the FEMA map floodplain, is going to move, because the ultimate determining factor for the special flood hazard area is base flood elevation. That was the determination by staff, that this particular blue line would change and move. It's right around here somewhere to which it would be moved, subject to a LOMA. In the meantime, again, just to finish up on this map, this is the extent of the moderate habitat conservation area. And these two numbers here are basically, again, this is 100 feet upland from the inundation line, and then this is 100 feet upland from the floodplain. I'm just showing that because, again, staff determined that this line, this blue line, essentially goes away, but at least for purposes of whatever the discussions become, I did want to show that particular number as well. So,
right. And so what are we calling the stuff that's to the upland or east of the what's now the moderate HCA, just the tree canopy?
Beyond?
Yeah, where it's got the tax lot or the which got the assessor's number. What is that called?
So we're calling that area not what we're calling that area is not essentially a topic of this particular discussion. That area is outside of any sensitive area overlay, except to say, just as an aside, so you know, that area is mapped as what is called upland habitat. Upland habitat was an additional level of habitat conservation area mapping that was done by Metro. However, it is not required to be regulated, and it is not required to be adopted, and it is not required to be a part of a local government's Goal 5 inventory. And so you should just, I guess, be aware of that on the side. But again, this area is not regulated and is not a part of this discussion.
So is there any low HCA? I'm looking at the legend over there at the top left corner. We don't have to worry about low HCA?
Do not have to worry about low HCA in this case. Yes.
Okay.
Low HCA is offsite.
Okay. And we don't have to worry, assuming they get the LOMA, which is a condition of approval anyway, we don't have to worry about the light blue lines, correct?
That is what staff concluded. Yes.
Okay. So just for everyone, so what the applicant wants to do is they want to change the area that's moderate HCA now, change it to what?
They want to remove it.
So it'll be just like the tree canopy area. It's like no regulations.
Yeah, no
HCA regulations.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Now walk us through what they have to show. Sorry, it took a long time to get to this. This is what my main question to us is laying out the lay of the land there. Now what do they have to show in order to get the modern HCA removed?
Okay, so see if I have the best mapping maybe for this.
So we start with the Metro map, and generally we assume that's correct, but if they want to show that it's not correct, they have, which is a subsection, was it 4, that they can try to show that under?
Yeah, it's table 706-1. It's basically, it's subsection 706.09E4.
Yeah.
That's the methodology for manually assessing the habitat conservation area. And then it's specifically to go through this table 706-1. And so, as I said, in the end, all of this really boils down to as you kind of walk yourself through this whole methodology, all of this really boils down to what exists and where do you go and what do you find within 0 to 100 feet from the edge of flood area. So if you start with flood area, the flood area, we've already said that we, at least staff concluded, that flood area with regard to the FEMA floodplain can move closer. It's going to can move closer to the river and can, for all intents and purposes, be out of the picture, because it's somewhere down in the road in Willamette Drive. It's roughly right around there. However, flood area also is the 1996 inundation line, and so
why do we care? Why do we look at the 100 feet? Is this table that tells us to look at the 100 feet from the flood inundation line?
It's essentially this point here. So, you get to this area here down at the last row. You get to the point where you have to analyze what is there from 0 to 100 feet from the edge of the flood area. And so, if you encounter forest canopy within 0 to 100 feet from the edge of the flood area, then you are in fact class 2 riparian habitat, which effectively translates to moderate habitat conservation area. So in the end, this is really the key extent or segment of this methodology that you care about, that one cares about most, or that both the appellant and the applicant are discussing, is 0 to 100 feet from the edge of the flood area. And so what is the flood area? Well, the maximum extent of the flood area, as far as staff is concerned, is the 1996 inundation line as inventoried by Metro, digitized by Metro. I believe the applicant provided an exhibit that might provide some additional information about the actual extent of the 1996 inundation line. There's nothing in the ZDO that I could find, or that I, in consultation with the planning director, could find that said that the 1996 flood inundation line has to be that line digitized by Metro. Again, the other part of this is, so once you determine the flood area, or if you even go off of the 1996 flood inundation line as available to staff, what is out there in the field? How do you actually get to tree canopy in the field when you get to 0 to 100, within 100 feet? And as I say, in revisiting the application, it's very possible that you do encounter tree canopy in the field. I myself was not out in the field measuring it. I was going off of aerials and essentially concluding that the bulk, if not the entire area within that 0 to 100 feet, is house and manicured lawn.
So basically, we go back and look at 100 feet from the edge of the flood area, which is the 1996 flood inundation line.
Yep.
And if it's developed area is not providing vegetative cover, yep, then there's no HCA overlay. If it's low structure, vegetation, or open soils, there's no HCA overlay. If it's woody vegetation or forest canopy, then it's moderate HCA. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. Okay. And if we look at it right now, we don't care what it looked like when Metro made the map, or what the homeowner might have done in the interim. We just look at it at the date of the application.
Well, yeah, I mean, so on the one hand, the short answer is yes. We look at it at the date of the application. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so we've got, reading through decision, there's all this stuff about with contours and, you know, every like 50-foot slices, and, you know, you've got those the graphs and tables. Is that just sort of describing that area, or is there something more to it that I need to look at? It looks from the picture like, you know, yeah, I can see maybe the trees, or the tree canopy starts somewhere in the vicinity of that 100-foot line, but at least in the picture, whichever exhibit you just showed me, it sure looks like grass and manicured. It doesn't look like it doesn't look like woody vegetation or forest canopy, at least certainly getting really close to the what looks like the existing forest canopy. Am I missing something there?
So on the one hand, in terms of the definition, in terms of like the way that woody vegetation and low structure vegetation or open soils are defined, that area of lawn and that area of house doesn't meet those definitions, was the conclusion by staff. So the area prior to the forest canopy does not meet the definition of woody vegetation or low structure vegetation or open soils. It has to be like an acre of, I mean, the definitions are provided at the beginning of the staff report, but it doesn't, the finding by staff was did not meet the definition of those sensitive areas or those classes of riparian habitat. And so, and then number two, I think you were asking about, you did mention the staff report, or the staff decision, correct?
Yeah.
So you're talking about where the analysis of table 706-1 begins on page 22, essentially?
Yeah.
Okay, so that is essentially a segment-by-segment analysis of the entire table 706-1 beginning essentially at the mean high water line and going through the entire process. Now, again, the only element of that in question at this point is essentially the final segment of that analysis on page 23, the last sort of section of that analysis where it says flood areas. And again, that's where... sorry, I'm just reading my...
But the very last one where you talk about 0 to 100 feet from edge of flood area.
Exactly. I'm sorry. It's on page 24 where final analysis of that piece that gets to this, that gets to really what is the issue at hand, which is, again, gets back to this edge of flood area, 0 to 100 feet from the edge of the flood area. So unless there is a request or a need to revisit that entire analysis, essentially the topic at hand is that final piece of the analysis on page 24.
Right. So you've got the part about Metro did not, for the most part, map HCAs on top of pre-existing structures and areas upwind thereof. So is it sort of like you're thinking, you know, Metro's got to make these giant maps or looking at, you know, big areas. They just sort of accidentally... you know, put the house in the modern HCA. And if I understand, the opponents are saying, oh, you can't start interpreting what Metro did. You got to go with what they said.
Yeah. And you know, it, honestly, that's probably true. And so I think that this on the one hand could be seen as just simply kind of a random interpretation, I suppose, to get into the mindset of Metro. But behind that also is, I mean, that was probably more of a comment, potentially an irrelevant and or an inapplicable finding / comment. But behind all that was nonetheless an actual precise analysis, at least on the attempt of staff to continue to analyze to, I mean, I'm sorry, not to continue, to provide an analysis of that 0 to 100 feet extent or segment that's in question. The comment by staff was, I mean, I've been looking at staff being me, obviously, in this case, having been looking at habitat conservation area maps now for quite a while. You know, I've seen them laid atop of football fields, roads, legacy streams that haven't existed in years, on the one hand. And, you know, whether it has been rare to see them laid on top of homes. But again, you know, in fairness, it's probably an irrelevant finding in this case. So
it doesn't really matter what Metro was thinking or why they did it. All we care about in this analysis is, regardless of that, looking at this 100 feet, what is this 100 feet, deciding what it is.
I think it's completely fair to say that in terms of what staff may have thought Metro may be thinking or may customarily have seen itself to do, I think in the end it's an irrelevant comment. And quite frankly, if you start looking at how they mapped upland habitat, there isn't really a need to get into that here. Quite frankly, I think what staff can now see is it probably is basically a continuing, is essentially connected to their upland habitat mapping as well. And so I think it's perfectly fair to ignore that particular element of the decision that says exactly what it says, where it says, wherever it says that. the business where, oh, here we go. Well, wherever it is that it says that Metro typically did not map habitat conservation area on top of houses, I think it's an irrelevant finding, and in part is, like I say, reflective of, say, staff's experience in at times encountering habitat that has been mapped on roads and other areas that are not habitat. But anyway, I'll just leave it at that unless you have any further questions on that. So thanks.
Thank you. So if I understand, the only difference between what you're saying today and what you said in the staff decision was that it's possible that when you're going out right at the end of that 100 feet from the 1996 flood inundation line, we might actually be incorporating a little bit of the forest canopy. In that case, you might sort of have this sort of floating, unattached, modern HCA area on those trees that are within 100 feet, but not the rest of the area back towards the house. Is that right?
I think what I'm saying is what staff had never entertained the concept that that during an HCA manually locating the HCA through an HCA map verification, that you could literally disembody or slice out a section of the HCA and then continue it again. However, in hindsight and upon further reexamination, there does not appear anything to prohibit that. So I don't see just as that there is anything that would prohibit you from essentially, if you can just imagine yourself being out there in the field and you stand at the edge of the flood area, and then you start walking 100 feet upland, that the HCA may in fact go away where you're at house. You'd have to be walking on top of the house to start this process. But where you are basically, as you walk along the top of the house and then jump off the house into the manicured backyard, you're removing HCA, you're removing HCA, you're removing HCA until some point out there at, I don't know, 80, 90 feet, you then encounter forest canopy, and at that point you then keep that section of that moderate HCA polygon.
Okay. Now, I'll ask the applicant and the opponents about this too, but as far as I can tell, the only evidence on that is the I forget which exhibit it is, but the one that had the blue lines on it for the SFHA. And it looks like that 100-foot line from the 1996 inundation line, it's like right at the trees. So it's like, it could be in the trees. It might be right before the trees. Can't really tell. Do we have any? Yeah, thank you. That's the one I was talking about. Do we have any better evidence that you know of that, like, to find out whether there really are trees within that 100-foot area or not?
So from the perspective of staff, no, because this was all, staff did not visit the site, staff did not go out in the field and pull 100-foot tape. This was all done by aerial.
Well, so, I'll ask the applicant, though, and the opponent, so they probably have the better people to tell me about that.
Exactly. So anything else? I can stop sharing this presentation if you'd like, and then I can turn it back over to you if you'd like, or get out of the way here with this presentation.
No, thank you for answering this. Thanks for walking me slowly through it again. I thought I had that, but I wasn't sure. So now I think I have a good understanding of what we have to look at today.
Okay, got it. Yep. So
thank you, Mr. Hanska. Now we'll turn it over to the applicant for their presentation.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So this is Steve Kay, Cascadia Planning and Development Services. For the record, my address is P.O. Box 1920, Silverton 97381. And I'm representing the applicant. The applicant, I don't believe, is on this online meeting today. I do have information to share with by screen, so if I just could have the permission to do that. Okay, are you able to see something on your screen that I'm sharing?
No, not yet.
Okay. Are you able to see that now?
I see. Yeah, I now see. Yep, a picture.
Okay.
A screensaver kind of thing. Yeah.
All right. So the applicants read the appeal documents, the statements from neighbors. Maybe before I present the evidence that I'd like to show you today, I just wanted to go over a couple things that were brought up as concerns by the neighbors. I think it's for their benefit to understand what the applicant's intent is. So the applicant is allowed, there was a comment that the applicant's not allowed to request an HCA map verification without concurrently requesting an HCA development permit. And per section 706.06b2, the applicant may request a HCA map verification even if one's not required for development of the site. The applicant's submitted narrative clearly states that no development is currently proposed for the site. The applicant indicated that he intends to remodel the existing dwelling and would like to resolve the HCA map boundary issue before a development permit is requested. And per section 706.06b, approval of a HCA map verification is valid for 4 years. So that gives the applicant ample time to obtain a permit from the county. Another assertion is that the applicant intends to remove trees in front of the house or within the Willamette Drive right-of-way. And as stated in the narrative, the applicant did initially consider a partition of the site. And when discussing that possibility with county staff, they indicated that the Willamette Drive roadway would need to be widened to 20 feet wide. And if that were to occur, then some trees would likely need to be removed within the right-of-way. However, the applicant evaluated site development costs and he made a decision to only remodel the existing house. No street widening or street removal, either in front of the house or within the right-of-way, is proposed. If the county's original land use decision is upheld, all the trees will still remain within the retained HCA and would not be able to be removed without a public notice being issued and the approval of a HCA development permit. Again, that's not what's being proposed by the applicant. So before taking a closer look at what is being proposed, I think we should evaluate the available data sources and consider how that data might be displayed on a map. This is FEMA's flood map, and this shows the Willamette Drive area. There's a pin dropped where the subject site is located. FEMA has determined that the 100-year flood elevation at this location is 46.1 feet.
Mr. K, I don't know if you're, all I'm seeing is your, looks like a screensaver of a pond. I'm not sure if you were trying to show me something else at this point, but.
Are you seeing my cursor move?
No. All I'm seeing is it looks like a background of screensavers, a pond with a little pier and a little waterfall kind of thing.
Okay, let me. Not sure.
I see your cursor moving around, but.
Okay, let me make sure that I'm sharing the right screen. Let's try this again. Are you seeing?
Oh, now I've got something.
Okay, good. Okay, so this is the slide I was on. So again, the floodplain elevation as determined by FEMA is 46.1 feet. It's clear when you take a look at this map that the map only shows general flood boundaries, as the map shows straight lines where the floodplain is and does not illustrate detailed variations in topography, which would be present if the properties were surveyed. That's why FEMA has a process where you can request a LOMA or a letter of map amendment, and that allows documented site survey information to be submitted to the agency to amend their maps. So there is a process that FEMA has for updating maps, as well as Clackamas County has for updating HCA maps. So it's clear when you look at Metro's maps, they're based on FEMA's generalized floodplain map. So this straight line for the 100-year floodplain illustrates that detailed topographic information was not incorporated into the map. Anyone that's driven this stretch of Willamette Drive knows that there's significant elevation changes. Therefore, the 46.1-foot flood elevation could not possibly follow a straight line in this location. This map shows where Class 1 and Class 2 riparian areas are currently mapped on the site. Metro Class 1 areas are classified as high HCA by Clackamas County. Class 2 areas are classified as moderate HCA. Since detailed topographic information was not available during Metro's mapping of the riparian areas, generalized flood maps and a 2002 aerial photo was used to determine habitat boundaries. The applicant maintains that the previous habitat mapping for this site is inaccurate. To delineate an accurate flood area and corresponding HCA map for the property, the applicant used survey contoured information and FEMA's designated 100-year floodplain elevation and data that was collected by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers during the 1996 flood event. To assist with the process of doing this, we contacted Christina Appleby, who is a hazards expert at DOGAMI, and that's the State Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. She forwarded me GIS files, which were created by data that was collected by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers during the 1996 flood event. Then using Google Earth and looking to the north, in this case, this slide illustrates the limit of the 1996 flood inundation zone, shown in light green, on the east side of the roadway, within the right-of-way, not within the middle of the house, as Metro's more generalized flood maps show. The files provided by Dogami also include high watermark data points collected by the Corps of Engineers, including a location that's a block south of the subject site. This data point indicates that the 1996 flood elevation is 48.1 feet in the vicinity of the subject property. This Google Earth image shows the 1996 flood inundation area looking south along Southeast Willamette Drive. Again, the home on the subject property is not located within the limits of the 1996 flood. This exhibit shows actual topography for the subject site based on data collected by a registered surveyor. FEMA maps indicate that the 100-year floodplain elevation is 46.1, which is this line shown on the map. And the Army Corps of Engineers data indicates that the 1996 flood elevation is 48.1, which is this line on the map. It's also important to note that this exhibit identifies slopes on the site, which are 200 feet from the ordinary high watermark of the Willamette River, which is located here. And slopes which are greater than 25% only extend about 30 feet from that ordinary high watermark. So when you look at table 706-1, it states that when a flood area is located within 300 feet of a river, forested canopies that are located within that flood area may be designated a class one resource. In addition, if a forest canopy is located within 100 feet from the edge of a flood area, which is what we've been talking about mostly today, it can be classified as a class two riparian area. This exhibit measures that the nearest tree canopy, which is here in the rear yard, is located 130.38 feet from the 1996 flood elevation. That's, again, that's this line of the tree canopy. Therefore,
how many feet is that again? 130, what'd you say?
130.38.
Okay.
From that point to this point of the canopy. So therefore, based on table 706-1 standards, the rear yard tree canopies cannot be classified as a class one or class two resource associated with the flood area. This exhibit is a site plan with the flood elevations identified, but the topographic contours are turned off for clarity. Based on the presented evidence, the applicant requests that the original land use decision is upheld. We believe that the information presented today clearly illustrates that the tree canopied area in the rear of the site does not meet the thresholds for a class one or class two riparian area. And as such, the submitted HCA map verification and requested HCA map amendment are permitted as approved by the county, which would be along this line, which is the western boundary of the house. So on behalf of the applicant, we appreciate your consideration of the presented information. I'll be on hand to answer any questions that you have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. K. Just to be clear, I understand you that when you're doing that measurement on this one you have up now, you're using the same 1996 flood inundation line that was in the exhibits and the staff decision. You're not trying to change the 1996 flood inundation line.
Well, it does adjust because we know what that flood elevation was based on data that was collected by the Army Corps of Engineers. I don't believe county staff used that data when presenting the information to you earlier, they use Metro's maps, which are generalized flood maps that were presented, not based on actual topographic information on the site.
Okay, well, what would happen if we used the line that, that Mr. Hanska was using, that, that dark blue line on his exhibit, that I guess is probably closer to the house than yours? If you go 100 feet from that, are you getting into the tree canopy as opposed to being 130 feet away? Or
if the 1996 were actually located here, then yes, you would be within 100 feet. But the 1996 elevation is down here at this location.
Okay. Well, thank you. There's a number of conditions of approval for this, and then you know the other parts of the decision that apparently aren't being challenged. Do you have any concerns or issues with any of the proposed conditions of approval?
No. The applicant accepts all conditions as written by staff.
Okay. And then we'll, maybe you can see what comes up from the opponents, and then you can address that during rebuttal. Okay.
Sure.
All right. Now would be the opportunity. We have Ms. Morrison, and I'm assuming that's Mr. Kunis, who are the attendees. If I'm assuming the appellant is not in favor of the application. So, Ms. Morrison, I'm not sure if you're in favor of the application, this would be the time to testify. If not, then maybe we'll start with the appellant and let him testify first. So Ms. Morrison's got her hand up, so why don't we see.
Thank you so much. I wanted to just verify the fact that we're basing our information on the maps that were provided by the county, not the maps that were provided by Mr. K today, which were very interesting. And I also was concerned
Ms. Morrison,
that
are you
1964 flood.
Ms. Morrison, are you planning, is this, we sort of want to figure out which side you were on. It sort of sounds like you're launching into your testimony. Are you opposed, I take it?
Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Why don't we let, if you're opposed, why don't we let the appellant, Mr. Kunis, go first? And then
I'm in concert with Mr. Kunis.
Okay. Well, okay.
I agree with Mr. Kunis. Sorry.
If he wants you to go first, that's fine. I'll let the opponents decide how they want to do it. But if we get your, we've got your name now, Jane Morrison, but if you give us your address too, just so we have that for the record.
4053 Southeast Jennings Avenue.
Okay. Thanks. All right.
Also on the river.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Now, should I go ahead?
Thank you.
Very interesting to see the information from the Army Corps of Engineers. And I was wondering whether or not staff had also looked at the floodplain as defined by the 1964 flood.
Mr. Hanska, why don't you go ahead and you can respond to that if you'd like.
No, not the 64. I wouldn't have any reason to look at the 1964 flood. Number two, I had not seen information provided by the Corps of Engineers. And as previously noted, there isn't anything that requires the extent of the 1996 flood inundation line to be derived solely from the digitized data provided by Metro. There's nothing that in the ordinance that requires that. It just basically references the 1996 flood inundation line. So at least staff's conclusion is that.
Okay, thank you very much. Right. If there is an opportunity to
we may be losing your audio, Ms. Morrison.
I'm sorry.
I caught if there's an opportunity, and then I didn't hear anything after that.
Right. Because I'm unfamiliar with the way these kinds of things go, if there is additional information as provided by the by Mr. K today, how will that be incorporated into your decision? Since we haven't had a chance to see that before.
Right. Well, we sort of talked at the beginning. You have the opportunity to request to leave the record open if you want, as does Mr. K. So.
Okay. Is that the responsibility of Mr. Kunis, who is the who filed the appeal? Or I, as a representative of the CPO.
Oh, you're with the CPO. Oh, you can as well. It would help if he did it. I mean, if you request the record would be left open and then for some reason Mr. Kunis, as the appellant, decided to drop the appeal, then the appeal would be dropped despite you having left the record open. But you can request that the record be left open.
Okay. I will defer to Mr. Kunis, but it was very interesting to see that new information, and it would be nice to be able to take a look at that in more detail. And I'm sure the Watershed Council would be interested as well.
Yeah. And just a quick question, Mr. Kay, there's a lot of maps. Was that map you showed that had the 130 feet to the trees, is that something that's already in the record or is that something new?
That was something that we had researched. We requested the data from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers after the appeal was filed. So that exhibit is new. Okay. I believe it's been emailed to the county, so there is a copy that's in the record as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you for clarifying that. Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Morrison. Don't understand you to be turning it over to Mr. Kunis now?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your testimony. All right, Mr. Kunis, now's your opportunity.
Can you hear me now?
I can, yes.
Okay, the reason I appealed is because the CPO couldn't file an appeal without a new meeting, and the deadline was approaching fast, and a new meeting couldn't be scheduled in time. So I appealed that in so that the CPO and that the North Clackamas Watershed Council would have an opportunity to present their information. And have you received the information from the North Clackamas Watershed Council? The letter of October 20th.
I think that's what you sent me just recently, right, Mr. Hanschke? I don't want to try pulling up different screens on my computer and leave the Zoom meeting. But
yeah, so the information provided by Mr. K, Cascadia Planning and Development Services, you have received that, and it's been entered into the record as Exhibit 13. The comments from North Clackamas Watershed Council have been received and forwarded to you as well, and are in the record as Exhibit 14. And then the comments from Jennings Lodge CPO that were received today have also been provided to you and are entered into the record today as Exhibit 15. So I believe that you've got everything on hand.
Okay. So opponents wouldn't have had a chance to look at, well, I think it was Exhibit 13, the map Mr. K just showed today, right?
No, that I have not distributed that to anybody except to the hearings officer.
Okay. And you weren't looking at that when you made your decision, correct?
No, I was not.
Okay. All right. Thanks for clarifying that. Okay, Mr. Kunis, I'll let you continue with your testimony.
So I'm deferring to the North Clackamas Watershed Council. There are reasons for this appeal. They state that the forest canopy east of the structure, in reality, is a Class 2 riparian habitat. And I agree with what they're saying, and that's what I'm basing the appeal on now. Okay, and that's basically what I'm saying. I'm following what they say.
Okay.
And that's basically what I have to say about.
And so are you, I just want to make sure, it sounds like you and Ms. Morrison are requesting that the record be left open. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. We'll talk about how that works at the very end of the hearing, but I just wanted to make sure. That's what I understood her to say, but I wanted to clarify. Okay, so that's all you wanted to add today, Mr. Kunis, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. We don't have anybody else here, so that's all the rest of the people who want to testify. Mr. Hanska, now is an opportunity for you to respond to anything that's come up. I'm curious what you have to say about that new, I guess it's Exhibit 13 from Mr. K. But all you can talk about, obviously, anything you want to.
Well, yeah, I mean, so as far as the new information from Mr. K, again, I would just kind of reiterate that, and I looked at this, to be sure that there wasn't anything that required, I keep referring to this magical metro line. So my belief, just so you're kind of clear on this, my belief is that I believe that what Metro did is that and again, I could be wrong. This would ultimately need to be affirmed by Metro. By way of aerial imagery, immediately subsequent to the February 1996 floods, and you probably remember those. Those were, at least in the most recent history, the most substantial flooding. Granted, probably the most epic flood of memory is 1960. It's the floods of the Christmas of 1964. But that's not a part of this ordinance. It's not mentioned in the ordinance. The 64 floods aren't an element of analysis in Section 706. Anyway, that I believe what Metro did is they identified the extent of the inundation of the 1996 flood by way of aerial imagery, and then they digitized it, and then that data became initially a part of what's known as Title III, or the Water Quality Resource Area, and then was subsequently used in the... This is just background, Fred. Sorry to...
give me the background.
And then, of course, it was also incorporated into the Habitat Conservation Area mapping methodology. And basically, what I keep telling you about this line is that, as you probably know well, our GIS / technology services folks manage and maintain tremendous amounts of data for us. They collaborate with Metro under what's called the Regional Land Use Information System, and in turn we receive data that is QC'd and managed by Metro that then becomes at our disposal. And this one of the many pieces of GIS data that's been around, that in this case has been around for a long time, is this February 1996 inundation line. And so that information has been available in all of the end users in the county mapping system, and it's also available to us who work with GIS. And so that's what the 1996 inundation line is that I refer to. And the only one that, at least in my experience, staff has utilized to identify the February 1996 inundation line. There is nothing in Section 706 that prohibits requires that line that I've referred to be the line or the identifying piece of data that defines the 1996 inundation lines. In other words, there's nothing that would prohibit somebody, as far as I can tell, from obtaining that information from an additional source or from another source.
Okay. Yeah, that was my big question, is because it seems like if they can't get the LOMA, then the 100 feet would start from the SFHA that's in the middle of the house. So that's why they want to move that.
And yep.
Without going through all the stuff involving Mr. Kip O'Connor, we've done a lot of stuff about how you move the SFHA, but I think now, at least with the new code, it has to be with the LOMA. So are you saying that you can move the night? We've got the blue. I'm referring to, I don't know if you can see that one very well, but the one where that's got the blue line for the 1996 flood line. Are you saying that this, unlike the SFHA, can be adjusted now with something from, the applicant's experts?
Well, so in my opinion, there's nothing that prohibits that line being adjusted on the basis of additional new or better data. the 1996 inundation line.
So how do we do, have you looked at it? What does staff think? I'm certainly not going to attribute any bad motives to this applicant, but what if somebody else came in and said, oh yeah, it's hundreds of feet the other way, which would be clearly inaccurate. How does that get reviewed? Does staff say, okay, yes, it's like sort of preponderance of the evidence to the review, or how do we address whether or not to use the new proposed line or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think in this case, you'd have to make a fine if with new data. I mean, by default, when staff goes through this stuff and makes the finding on the 1996 inundation line, there's been no additional consideration of other data in my experience. And so it's basically just been sort of a standard finding on the Metro 1996 inundation line and referring to that. In the case of when new data would be brought in, I think it would be a matter, because the ordinance just simply makes reference to the inundation line, doesn't actually require it to be this digitized line by Metro, that you'd have to make a straight-faced professional analysis of the origination and source and accuracy of the data. And so, this appears to be coming from a reputable source. I would have to say objectively and in my professional opinion. I think, for example, alternatively, in thinking about this, it's very possible that somebody literally may have a high water mark. So just to sort of show you from sophisticated to less sophisticated or even more primitive data, it's possible that a high water mark that, was clearly, I guess, there and believable, you might even be able to go off of something that like that. So I'm just basically saying that there's nothing that prohibits the consideration that I can see of additional or new data to identify the extent of the 1996 inundation line. So that's kind of a long answer, maybe more than what you wanted, but.
No, that's helpful. So, because there's going to be an open record period. So presumably county staff can take a look at Exhibit 13 and give it a thumbs up or thumbs down. Because the opponents might want to weigh in and give it a thumbs down. So.
Okay.
And then just for, I don't think this matters for the decision, I'm just sort of curious, is that it seems like there's going to be removal at least some of the modern HCA, and then, by the house at least. And I'm trying to figure out what, if all he wants to do is remodel the house, like what's the fight about? I mean, I can understand if there had been a partition, then whether there's an HCA, modern HCA over there would probably make a big difference. But if he's just remodeling his house, just sort of for my edification, what is the fight about? Or maybe Mr. K, maybe you could better answer this. But
well,
I would say that I agree with you. We were a little surprised that there would be opposition to just removing the HCA for the remodeling of the house, but I believe that there probably was some misinformation about tree removal that helped factor into the appeal.
Okay.
Unfortunately. All right.
That's just more of my own curiosity. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
If you don't mind, I could just, the advantage for somebody would basically be that it would get them out of an HCA development permit. In the end, that's the advantage. And so, because on the one hand, if you have an existing house, this one being built in 1941, you could basically remodel the house under as an exempt use with only the requirement for a habitat conservation area map. I'm sorry, construction management plan. Under the limitations of only expanding the structure by 500 square feet. And so anything beyond 500 square feet of a remodel would kick in what's called the habitat conservation area development permit. So that's basically that's in the end, as far as at least I can tell, that would be the advantage of a removal of the habitat conservation area, in the area wherein which an addition was proposed that exceeded 500 square feet, if that is the goal. So
Right. But assuming, I have to go back and look at all the watersheds, all their arguments. But if the, even if we brought in where the tree canopy is and said, okay, that's still in the HCA, it seems like it's going to get removed right next to the house, at least. And wouldn't that be where the house was going to get remodeled anyway?
Yeah, I mean, that would, exactly. If it seems like it's, you know, if the area around the house itself and essentially to the east of the house where I believe that the remodeling would be proposed, if that area is removed, then at least from what I understand from what the applicant is saying, then you would do that work in an area that was no longer classified as habitat conservation area. And thus then you would not need to do an HCA development permit, and you may still end up with habitat conservation area overlaid on the tree canopy. If that's how this, however it is that this, you know, the your analysis of this plays out. But I don't believe, anyway. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I think those are my only questions, remaining questions for you, Mr. Anishka. Thank you for answering so many of them already. I guess, Mr. K, this is the opportunity for your final rebuttal.
I really don't have anything to add other than, I just hope that you take a close look at the data that we provided, and I invite staff and the appellants as well to take a look at that data. It could be, anyone can independently obtain that information from Dogami or from the Corps. So that data is out there. It's free for anybody to access.
And so do you have a position on sort of, it's come up since the decision about, let's say for some reason, we stick with the 1996 flood inundation line and some of that tree canopy is within the 100 feet. It sounds like after Mr. Hansen's discussions with the planning director that there would be the possibility for, call it like a free-floating, you know, disembodied modern HCA zone. Do you have a position on that? Or I don't see how that would probably mess up plans to remodel, but do you have a position?
Well, I guess you'd have to make that decision based on whether or not the 1996 flood data that we presented is accurate. If you find that it's not accurate, then that's an option that I think the applicant would be willing to accept, having that segmented habitat conservation area in the rear yard. However, from the data that we've presented, I don't believe that that can be classified as moderate HCA. So, that's something that I guess you guys need to take a closer look at.
Right. So the way it's hitting me right now is if I use your 1996 line, then all the trees are out of the HCA and you get what you want. If for some reason I use the existing, the blue one that's on the maps already, the one that's counted, then you might have the sort of the, what did you call it, a segmented. I like that. You might have a segmented HCA, but that's, if you're stuck with the existing line, then that's okay with you to have the segmented area. If you're stuck with the existing line.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's correct.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that. Okay. Well, we've had a request to keep the record open, so we need to sort of talk about that. Ms. Morris and Mr. Kunis, though, and Mr. K, if you haven't done this before, the way this works is we'll close the public hearing. So this will be the last time for us to testify, you know, on Zoom or in person, that kind of thing. But the record will be left open and you can submit things the way you've submitted them before in writing. There's three parts to the open record period, and I've got a little script that I read for that. But we generally will do 1 week, 1 week, 1 week, and I think we're running tight on the 150 days, 120 days on this. So I don't think we can go longer than 1 week, 1 week, 1 week, unless Mr. K wants more time and we'll grant an extension.
But we're not asking for any additional time.
All right. So the way this works is the record is open an additional 1 week for any participant to respond to new evidence. I'm sorry, I was reading the wrong thing. The record is open 1 week from today for any participant to submit additional written evidence, argument, or testimony. So that's basically the same way it's been up until now. Anything you submitted before today's hearing, that's how it's like for the next week. The record is open an additional 1 week after that for any participant to respond to new evidence submitted during the first open record period. So you can submit new evidence, but it can only be responding to stuff that came in during the first period. It can't be evidence having to do with something else. And finally, the record is open an additional 1 week after that for the applicant to submit their final written argument in support of the application. The applicant's final submittal shall not include any new evidence. It's basically just a legal brief saying, here's why we should get approval, but you can't submit any new evidence. If that's not crystal clear, and I know that can be kind of confusing, if you want to talk to Mr. Hanska, after the hearing, he can walk you through it. He said it has to be received by 4 p.m. the day it's due. I think email is probably the best. If it's sent in the mail, it actually has to be received by the day it's due. If it gets there later, it doesn't get included in the record. So I think with that, that will conclude today's proceedings, unless there's anything you needed to add, Mr. Hanska.
Well, I guess the only thing I would add, of course, make sure if the hearings officer, if you need something in addition to staff, please let me know or let Darcy know. I can get that to you. Just if indeed this data, which we don't really have any reason to doubt, is Corps of Engineer data, I guess, that has been on hand by the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries that actually has an elevation of the 1996 inundation line. I mean, this appears to me to be good data and possibly more accurate data than the 1996 inundation line. That would be my initial professional assessment of this data. And so, again, also, I guess, just to reiterate that the extent of the special flood hazard area could be changed by LOMA. That is the position the staff has taken on that. So that's the only thing I would conclude. And I guess just please, as always, let me know if you need additional information or clarification, or if any new information comes in, you need anything from me / staff.
Yeah, I think it would be helpful if you took a quick, review of that map Mr. K presented.
Okay, got it. Yep.
All right. Okay, well, I think with that concludes today's proceedings. Again, we have the one week open record period, and then my decision will come out within a couple of weeks after that. So thank you, everybody. Thank you, Ms. Morrison. Thank you, Mr. Kunis, for everybody being polite and cordial and getting along. That doesn't always happen, so I appreciate that. And everyone else, have a nice afternoon. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.